This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Welcome back, boys and girls, for yet again another special edition of the Michael Deacon Program. In a moment, I'll be joined by the man of the hour, Mr. Jay Widener. If you haven't subscribed yet to the channel, please do so now. You might need to. Once again, it's always a honor and a pleasure to be doing this for all of you out there live. I miss doing live shows. We'll get back into the groove. Once again, boys and girls, thanks for being here. Let's get things going. And joining me right now is Mr. Jay Widener. What's going on, Jay?
Oh, not much. How are you doing?
I am doing great, and it's good to see you. You're here on camera looking at the new room in the background. I see that painting back there. Beautiful painting. What is that, by the way?
The painting? That
yeah,
one?
Was that yours?
It's a Lakshmi.
I was going to say, did you paint that?
No.
Okay.
It's Lakshmi, the goddess of money.
Ooh.
And wealth.
Very nice. India. Very nice. Yeah. And of course, Jay, you look great. You're here on camera for everyone. You look vibrant. You look rather happy.
I am happy.
Hell yeah. Very nice.
I've been under a lawsuit for 4 years and I'm no longer under it. So, you know, you don't know what kind of stress you're under when you're getting sued for $5 million. And the guy that's suing you is writing you emails saying that he's going to do everything he can to take every penny from you so that you're broke for the rest of your life.
My goodness.
Yeah, it was a lot of stress. And then when the case got dismissed on April 1st, which is my day because I've followed the path of the fool. It was really the first time in over 4 years that I was not under, you know, this duress. And so for now it's been a whole month and wow.
What a difference. Better. Yeah, what a difference. Yeah. You look much more alive than the last couple times I've seen you. And of course, your court case was dismissed against Corey Good on April 1st. Happy belated April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
And that is quite apropos.
Yeah, it's interesting because it is my day. It's a day I celebrate every year because I'm on the path of the fool, which is supposedly the fastest way towards enlightenment. And I started at Gaia on April 1st. That was on purpose. And And I've done several other things that have happened to me on April 1st, but this one was totally unexpected.
Absolutely. Well, it can, everyone can tell, basically, that you look much more happier. And I have to agree with all of them out there that have said that. And I got to ask you, Jay, was there ever a time when you fully believed in Corey Good and David Wilcox's story?
For a couple months, maybe. I sort of believed it, yeah.
So you were,
I was a guy, and my job wasn't really to believe anybody. My job was to produce a really good show with good lighting and sound,
right,
and interesting subjects and all of that. So it really wasn't my job to believe or not believe. I had a lot of people I didn't believe that were on. I had one guy on who, he said, it was like, I think we were taping the show in September, and he said that the world would be over by the end of the year. Mm. And, you know, we're talking about the show with all those of the people, the showrunners and things. And I wish maybe we shouldn't air this show because, you know, this guy's going to be wrong. And I'm like, no, air it. Let him be wrong. I don't care. And that's kind of how I felt. I kind of felt like we'd been under such restrictions with media for so long that I thought it was a real opportunity to let everything air, no matter how wacky or crazy. And let's just let it all out and let the jury, the viewer, decide what's real and what isn't. And that was always my tack towards this kind of stuff. And I mean, if you're crazy enough to get on TV and say something that's so outlandish that it's unbelievable, that's your problem, not mine. My problem is to get you in the frame right, make sure the audio is good and there's good lighting and a nice set and you have decent clothes on and you're clean. That's my job, you know?
Right. And you couldn't care any less about the other things, in other words.
I don't care. I really didn't. And I really, at the time, considered it our job to break what I wanted to do with Gaia when I started there.
Yeah, tell us about your vision. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to make a mystery school, you know, like Pythagoras or any of the great thinkers used to have these mystery schools. And you would go there and you would learn all the mysteries. And so, you know, I had, you know, millions of dollars and a studio and cameras and access to all the top talent because I knew everybody already, because of my radio show. And so I wanted to break the spiritual ice that has jailed mankind, humanity. And I didn't want any one particular point of view. I wanted a plethora of points of view. So I wanted all the different kinds of beliefs and religions to be presented, and religions and beliefs that were not very well known to be presented. And then I wanted to like shatter the paradigm. And I actually think that we did. I remember the world before 2012, before I started at Gaia, and as I worked my first 7 years at Gaia, I noticed that the languaging in the world was shifting and people were more accepting of near-death experiences and that yoga might actually be good for you and that, you know, maybe there is life after death and maybe there is something to all these people telling us all these strange spiritual and other kinds of stories. And I just wanted it all out in a free-form way that would make those that already believe all this feel better that they have company somewhere where there's people that think just like them. And a lot of these people live in little small fundamentalist towns in the South and Midwest, and they don't have anybody in their town that they can talk to about any of this stuff. I used to get their emails all the time while I was at Gaia. And I wanted them to know and reassure them that there were people who thought like they did. And then I wanted, of course, bring more people in who were the normies and convert the normies over into what I call the Woosters. And I think we accomplished both of those, actually. I forget his name now, the great the great media philosopher, Norman, I can't think of his name right now, but anyway, that's he right. once said, and I took this to heart when I started a guy, he once said, now I'll remember his name here in a minute. He's from Canada. He once said that if you present media that looks like what people are used to, you can tell them the sky is green and they'll believe it. And I thought, well, that's really interesting. So the medium is the message is what he was saying. It's his quote. And I wanted to test and see if that was actually true. Could I, you know, look like CNN or Fox or, you know, a network in look, but what you're hearing and seeing is completely, you know, at variance with what you're used to hearing and seeing. And it did work. And he was right.
And Jay, what's your relationship with Gaia now?
I could not work with them because for 4 years. I retired 4 years. It's interesting that I retired from Gaia the same exact month that I got sued and that the COVID lockdown happened.
Oh my.
March 2020. It all happened in the same month. So I retired from Gaia. I got a lawsuit 3 days later for $5 million. And then they shut down America about 2 days later. Everything happened in like 5 days.
Wow.
And so I couldn't even talk to people at Gaia anymore because the lawsuit was saying that Gaia and me were in a collaboration to destroy Corey Good, which wasn't true. But if we had any contact between us, then that would look or could look like we were doing some kind of collaboration, and I couldn't allow that. My attorney said, you can't do it. You can't talk to anybody. Their attorneys told them the same thing. And but now that the case is over, I'm talking to Gaia again, and I'm hoping I can work with them. I have several projects of famous books I would like to convert into documentaries. And I also like to do a series on alchemy. And so I haven't talked to them about any of this. I'm working with them on another project that I just started like 2 or 3 days ago. And it's great to be working with them again. And I really appreciate that I am working with them.
Understood. And do you regret your decision by helping Corey Good and David Wilcock? Because in my opinion, I'm a little bit perturbed that these individuals have reached the sort of level that they have, and the lack of discernment in this community, that's a little troubling to me. Do you feel that way as well, Jay?
I do. And, you know, the thing is again, in presenting all stories and cases and letting you guys discern, that was really what I was trying to do. Perhaps that was a mistake. I had no idea that it was possible to sit in front of a camera for hundreds and hundreds of hours and not tell the truth. I could not physically do that.
Same here.
I would be vomiting. I'd probably turn into an alcoholic or something,
right?
Because I wouldn't be able to live with myself. So I never thought that that was possible. I thought people could get something wrong, or maybe they got a delusion that the world's going to end or whatever. And they say that, or maybe they saw a light in the sky and it was Venus, but they thought it was a UFO. But those are mistakes. To deliberately go for hundreds of hours, I did not think was possible. And then when, you know, after a couple of months, I began realizing what happened was, is I'd caught Corey twice. We were shooting, it was a strange coincidence. We were having coffee and talking before the shoot, the four or five of us out in the operating room, the room where we have all the camera, the monitors and everything. And we were just talking about like our favorite YouTube shows or something. And I said, oh yeah, I like, I can't remember the name. It was a UFO show that used to be on Team Shield 10 or something like that. And I said, oh, I really like that show. I watch it every week. He puts out a show every week and I watch it. And Corey goes, yeah, I watch that too. And I was like, okay, watch the same show. Not that big of a thing. And Secure Team 10 was the name of the show. And so we go out to shoot, And then Corey starts telling this tale about how he got picked up in his backyard, you know, by the UFO, like his usual story, and that he was taken to Venus.
You know who has a similar story, by the way, Jay? I hate to cut you off like that, but just since you said that, our longtime friend Whitley Strieber also has tales like that as well, where him and his friends are in that cabin, and they're getting rides like Uber, in other words. That to me is insane, by the way, Jay.
Yeah. Whitley Strieber is another one I'm having a lot of trouble with. And I actually have always had a lot of trouble with, even though I know him and I like him.
He's a nice guy and everything, but he is an author.
He is. And then I had the fortunate to talk to one of Whitley's best friends that he grew up with in Texas. And this guy was now an author, and he was writing a book about what he thought were fake Satanists. Stories that were going around in the 90s. She wrote a book about it. False memories. They were called false memories. I don't know if they are false memories. I'm not judging any of that. I've never looked into it. But I was talking to this guy, and he said, "Oh yeah, well, my friend Whitley Strieber, he's always coming falling under false memory syndrome." I went, "Really?" He goes, Yeah. You don't really think all that stuff really happened, do you?" And I go, "I didn't really think it did happen, but I wasn't sure." And he said, "Nah, I don't think it really happened. I know Whitley." So I was like, okay. And that was 20 years ago or so that I was talking to this guy. So yeah, there's so what happened with me was that Corey started telling a story about going to Venus, and he went to an H-shaped building, a building that was shaped like an H. And a week before, on Secure Team 10, the show that he said he watched, was a show of these two guys from Italy who had done an entire examination of the Magellan imagery for Venus, and they found an H-shaped building inside a crater. And I stopped the filming. I cut the cameras. I opened up the door. I walked out of the studio. And I said, "Corey, you said that you watched Secure Team 10, didn't you?" And he goes, "Yeah." I go, "That last week they did a show about an H-shaped building on Venus."
Oh my!
And he just looked like a deer in the headlights. That was the beginning of my crumbling effect, and then I started catching other things, and then pretty soon I didn't believe any of it. But you know, that was the beginning, and that was probably 2 months into doing the shooting with him. So probably the third time that we'd done a shoot.
So you were a little conflicted, in other words.
I was, and then you know, I began like seeing through the dynamic of David and Corey, and realizing that Corey had some kind of bizarre mind control over David. And he would say things, and then a minute later, Dave would repeat the sentence, exactly what Corey had just said. You're like, "What? What's going on here?" And it was really weird and really uncanny. And I still, to this day, I can't figure it out.
And how do you feel about the band getting back together, by the way? Corey and David both appearing on a sort of conference out there in, I believe, Colorado, of all places.
Yep.
Your thoughts and opinions on that, Jay?
It didn't do very well. I know that. Conferences aren't going to be a thing that people are going to be going to in the future, not just because of COVID, but the internet makes it just so much easier. Travel is becoming a real pain in the ass, as most of you probably know. And I actually was hoping that it would make money, because Guy has got a counter lawsuit against Corey, and I think that he needs to get as much money as he can so that Guy can get it from him. And I think it's proof that they've always been colluding. There was always this question, is David, you know, just being taken in by Corey, or is he part of this operation? And, you know, that was a question, because I liked David. I worked with him for years before I met Corey. We produced a really good show, Wisdom Teachings, which I thought was the best show on Gaia. And it was a real collaboration with me. And so David and I, every week, we'd get together and talk about what we're going to do on the show this week. And two powerful minds were collaborating and making a really, really, really interesting show. And then David brought Corey in to do another show, and broke up our relationship because I was never a big fan of Corey's personality. And so, you know, it was a sad thing for me because I enjoyed my collaboration with David, and I kept him on the straight and narrow on wisdom teachings. I didn't let him fly off the handle on anything going off in deviations. I kept him. And of course, he would get mad at me because I'd be in the director's booth going, no, David, stick with the subject, stick with the subject. Don't go off board.
Yeah.
Don't start talking about the KKK. You know, you're talking about my molecular physics right now, you know, and don't start talking about the Pope. We're not talking about the Pope right now. We're talking about, you know, whatever. And it was kind of always constant. And, you know, he's kind of that kind of guy flying around, which right. gives him his intelligence. It's a sign of high intelligence, but it's also frustrating as a director to try to hold the guy onto a straight line of narrative.
I understand that. Yeah, he's kind of all over the place, no doubt. And I must say, between the two, Corey, you know, not so good of a public speaker, in my opinion, compared to David, where David currently right now, he still generates a large number of listeners and a strong following, even though this happened recently. I mean, that didn't really affect him at all.
No, his followers are, you know, they're mostly women over 50. There's nothing wrong with that. And they believe him, and you know, they believe everything he says, and that's fine. If you want to believe what he says, I don't care. I'm not here to correct David.
Right.
David's never sued me, and I'm going to sue David. I will correct the record with Corey Good. However, David is, if David's listening, you know, David, I really mean this. You actually still have a shot at redemption here. You really do.
I think he does.
You can just get on your show and say, hey, you know what? I'm sorry I did any of that stuff. I'm sorry I believed Corey Good. I'm sorry that I told Gaia that he had been completely vetted and checked out when he hadn't been. And, you know, I apologized. I got on my YouTube, the first show, May 8th, 2019, and I apologize for what I did. My biggest apology on the whole affair is I think I did too good a job. I think I did too good a job at producing and directing that show.
You did.
And made it so believable.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish that I had not done that now. But I really went out of my way to slick it up, and it really slicked it up. And because we were looking for a flagship show. You know, every fledging network needs a flagship, and we didn't have one.
Right.
And you know, it was a decision I made, and I would not do it now. If I could go back, I got in a fight with my boss right after the very first filming of Corey in the parking lot, big screaming match.
My.
And, I can scream. And I was screaming, no, we just did 8 shows. That's enough. Right. And he's like, no, we're going to do more. And then finally he said, if you don't do it, you're fired, basically. And so I said, okay, well, I got family and I can't afford to lose my job. And, you know, I've been a poor filmmaker my whole life, and I finally had a decent job, and I didn't want to lose it.
Understood. Fair enough. And for the record, I don't hate either of these men. I just think they
told
a few tall tales. That's all.
They did. It was all lies. I mean, he admitted under oath that it was all made up.
That's right.
You know, it's like, okay, so you just admitted that you sat in front of a camera for hundreds of hours and lied. You told George Norrie on George Norrie's show, he asked you to swear that you weren't a disinformation agent, and you swore you weren't. So you even swore that you weren't, and you still were. So, wow, what kind of karma is that?
Also, no good deed goes unpunished, Jay, and you found out the hard way.
Yeah, I did.
Hey, it happens. That's part of life, though.
Yeah, well, you know, my saying in life is, if you're 2 steps ahead of the crowd, you're a crackpot. If you're 1 step ahead of the crowd, you're a genius. And so you got to be careful and not get 2 steps ahead, or everyone will think you're a crackpot. And that's kind of been where I've been my whole life. Almost two steps ahead, then one step ahead. And maybe I better pull back. Maybe I better not go too fast. And because, you know, it's the problem with people like me is that we can see, I can see into the future slightly, like just a little bit into the future. And I can see where things are going just a little bit into the future. And it gave me a lot of power in running a network because I could see where trends were going,
right,
and things. And I think that was probably one of the main reasons that Gaia became so successful was that I navigated those first 7 years with using my limited psychic ability to try to get the trends going at Gaia, and it worked. And I think they're having trouble with that now with their programming. When I look at it, I see that they don't have that quick feet that we had but nowadays they've also got a giant bureaucracy where I didn't. I was basically just me and two or three other guys, and that was it. We were running the whole show, and I was deciding all the content, doing all the technical work. Nobody was looking over our shoulder. And maybe we should have had somebody looking over our shoulder, you know?
Possibly, but it's all water under the bridge. And obviously, you would possibly still talk to David, but probably not so much Corey in friendly terms.
I'll talk to David. David, anytime you want to talk, you got my number. You know where I am. Give me a call. You know I love you, bro. But, you know, you also made some mistakes and you got to apologize. And I'm sorry. I know it's hard on you. And proud people don't like to apologize. But you also should know this. Psychopaths don't apologize either. So the longer that you go without apologizing, we are torn between, is it just pride or is it something else?
Good. That's a great point. And in my personal opinion, I think both men should apologize on both of their shows. You know, they're doing... Well, David has his live stream, and Corey's doing some live shows as well on some other, I'm not sure who that is, but they're both out there. They should both apologize, in my opinion. And Jay, you know, they're going to hear this, by the way. These sort of things always go back to them. And all those people that listen, not the people that listen, but all the people out there, the ones that are involved with Gaia and all these radio shows, they all listen to this. So it will definitely get back to them. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And, you know, you could probably even, David could probably even save himself at Gaia for all we know. Now, here's the thing on Gaia's counter lawsuit, which they're definitely going to win. And it's a devastating lawsuit. I've read it against Corey. He will be forced to make a video apology. That's part of the deal.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That I didn't know. I'm very interested in that that whole ordeal if that does come to fruition.
Yep. He's going to have to. Literally, they're suing him for gazillions of dollars, and I don't see how he could possibly. He's going to have to settle in some way. I don't know how. I have no idea. I'm not involved in the case, but he will have to settle eventually.
Yeah, he has dug himself into a huge hole.
Never sue anybody. If you can avoid lawsuits, do it, because you don't know what the courts are going to do. You don't know what a jury is going to do, and it's going to cost you a ton of money.
Absolutely. And it seems like we have one of these people right now in the chat room that says, looks like Jay never got around to doing that ancient ritual that keeps you young. So there's one of those folks out there.
Yeah, well... if you're lucky to get old, then that's good for you. If you're not, well, then you die young.
That's true.
Yep.
That's quite the achievement to have that set of gray hair there, to be honest. I mean, I have some white chin hair, and I'm very proud of that, Jay. It means I'm a man.
Yeah, exactly.
Damn right. So, Jay, my goodness, again, I just can't believe how much happier you seem now, right now. In this present moment in time, you definitely have a peace of mind, as they say. And, you know, growing up, you hear that. You hear a lot of adults say you need that peace of mind. You don't really understand it until you actually go through with it. And then you finally do get that peace of mind. And you're like, oh, wow, they were right.
Yeah, well, going through a war will definitely teach you how to calm down.
That's right.
Just, there's nothing you can do about it. And you're like in a constant combat situation, you know, and, you know, I think Corey doxed me 3 times.
Yikes.
Put my name, my address, and my phone number out to the world on Twitter. And, you know, I live in the middle of nowhere and I have my family here. And I was, you know, so worried that someone was going to come, some crazy follower was going to come and kill me and my wife and my pets and my cows and my chickens. And I was like, you know, so I had to go out and get a concealed carry permit.
Oh, good. I was about to ask that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I called the sheriff, who is an hour and a half away. I said, well, what happens? And he said, dude, get a concealed carry permit. I can't help you. I'm like, okay.
Understood. I mean, I've had these threats before, but those people don't know that I'm armed like Waco. So, I mean, it's like, bring it. You want to come after me? People have doxed me.
The fool that comes into my house.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, okay, I've already been doxed. I've gone through the death threats. I've gone through it all. And I always think, you know, if you really want me dead, you know where I'm at. And it's not going to be me. It's going to be you. Trust me.
Yes, it is.
Oh, my.
And I've got traps all over my property. So, I mean, I've got 13 acres here and I've literally got traps everywhere. So you walk around on my property, you better say goodbye to your feet.
Yeah, I love your property, by the way. It's beautiful where you're at. I kind of have an understanding where you're at. I don't want to give up your spot, but you're in a great location. And by the way, David Wilcock, also in a very, very luxurious sort of a cabin in the woods.
Yep.
He's made a great living.
He has. He made a ton of money. I hear he owes $1.4 million to the IRS, though. I could have told him when he set up his 501(c) charity for him and Beth that was, you might as well just turn on a light as bright as the sun and say, hey, IRS, here I am. Come on. Because, I mean, that's just the dumbest thing you could do.
And I agree.
He did that 3 years ago. I went, man. Ooh,
that was a dumb That was a dumb move, in my opinion, by showing that.
Yeah.
Oh, no. My. By the way, that guy who sent that is actually a fan of yours of sorts. So I think he was just ribbing you.
Yeah. Well, I can take it. Don't worry. I was in Hollywood. Yeah, you can't get more insults than being a screenwriter in Hollywood. So no matter what you hurl at me, I've heard far worse.
Love that. And yes, sir. And before we move on from this topic here, I was just wanting to know this, and I'm sure others are too. Do you have anything in the works right now, Jay? Anything coming up here? Okay, you do. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, I just put out my film last summer, JFKX, Solving the Crime of the Century, which is on Prime Video, Amazon Prime, and it's a big hit. If you're outside of the United States, you can watch it on Vimeo. And I'm doing a new film. It's almost all shot right now, and we'll be starting to edit here in a few months. And it's going to be a pop culture examination of the MK Ultra campaign by the CIA.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool. And when is that going to be released? The newer one?
Before the end of the year, we'll have it out. Yep.
And where can people find that?
It'll be on Prime, Amazon Prime and Vimeo. That's my primary outlets right now.
Oh, shit. Okay. So it's on Prime.
Yeah. No.
Wow.
Yeah, JFKX has done very well. Surprisingly well. In fact, I've made back more on JFKX than it cost me in the attorney fees. So
wow.
I kind of balanced it all out and made myself a low budget film and got some of my money back. So that's one of the reasons why I didn't pursue Corey.
I see.
Counter lawsuit, because I know I would never get the money, but my lawyer told me it would be another $30,000 for lawyer fees to go after him. I'm like, I'm not going to spend another $3,000 on this turkey.
Yeah, no reason to. I mean, these people have already sealed their own fate, in my opinion. And again, Exactly. And it's all, they can redeem themselves, though, in my opinion.
Yeah, they can.
They ask for forgiveness, that's all.
Good. Yeah, and Corey, if you would volunteer to apologize before the Gaia thing, man, you could get in front of it. Just think about that.
That's right. And one of the last things I saw you, Jay, was on your channel, on your stream, Reality Check, I believe it's called, which is what's titled here. And in one of your videos, you, or that I watched rather, you were talking about 2001 Space Odyssey. That, of course, is the 1968 release. One of the greatest films ever created, in my opinion. And I was just curious, do you still believe that Stanley Kubrick helped fake the moon landing?
Oh, yeah. I have no doubt. I even know the big problem with my theory when it came out first was people who don't know film were going, well, Jay, that can't be true because Shepperton Studio in UK doesn't have a soundstage big enough. I went, that's a pretty good criticism. And then I was reading a book by a British author about the moon landings, and he said that that Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong had been seen at the Carlington blimp hangar 40 miles north of where Kubrick lived, and they'd created an entire moon set inside this gigantic blimp hangar. And then I realized, oh, there we go. That's where they did it. And, you know, it's 40 minutes away from his house so he could get home to bed at night, and which is what he wanted. And and that was a set big enough. It's now used as a movie studio. All the Batman movies by Christopher Nolan were shot there. They built all of Gotham inside this hangar. And it's used for gigantic sets in movies right now. And so the first movie that was shot there were the moon landings.
Understood. And did he have a unlimited amount of money to create this movie?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. They had, $40 billion.
$40 billion. Yeah.
Yeah. $40 billion was what the NASA program had been given. And, I believe that most of that was used in the secret space program, but they had more than enough money to give Kubrick, whatever, 10 million in those dollars would be about 150 million today. So yeah, he had more than enough money to do it.
I was curious if that might have
The moon landings, nobody ever points this out. I guess you have to have kind of a filmmaking background, but they get better. The sets get more elaborate. Vistas get bigger with each landing. So the first landing, 11, you don't see anything behind them. Then 12, the film got destroyed, or the camera got destroyed. I mean, then 13 was an accident. And 14 was now beginning of mountains in the background and bigger sets and everything. So I think that's when the blimp hangar got brought in on Apollo 14. And I think that they put a lacuna of a visual material coming out between Apollo 11, because 12 and 13 there was no visual material. So that was like almost a year and a half that Kubrick got to take the low rent stuff that was in Apollo 11 and the high rent stuff that's in Apollo 14, and then 15 gets better than 14, 16 gets better than others, and then 17 is like absolutely the top as far as production values is going. And that's exactly what happens in a movie. So if you watch Lord of the Rings, the first one, The Fellowship of the Ring, has pretty good effects.
Yeah.
And but by the third one, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Right.
Effects were. And that's because the crew works together. They get to know each other. They learn their tricks. And they, you know, by the time they get to near the end, they're just like a well-running, well-oiled machine. And that's what you see when you watch the moon landings. But you can't watch the moon landings. You can't even, I'm pretty sure you can't even watch them. I mean, I don't even think they're on YouTube. I think I looked like a year ago if Apollo 17 was on YouTube, and I don't even think it is. Not the whole thing anymore.
Probably not. And I always
have the entire set of moon landings. There's a company named Space Age Films or something back 15 years ago put out DVDs of all the moon landings, and I bought them all. And there's a real reason why they don't show them, because they look like crap.
That reminds me that the original footage is long gone, by the way.
That disappeared.
I wonder why.
All the telemetry data and everything was destroyed. And Bart Sobrel, my friend Bart Sobrel, who wrote A Funny Thing Happened to on the Way to the Moon, was just on Joe Rogan, and he had 10 million views, the most views that this subject has ever gotten.
That's crazy.
Bart, That's great. I'm so glad that you were on there. You held your own against Joe constantly trying to tell you were wrong, and you were great. And yeah, they mentioned this too, that the telemetry data, all the videos, everything is gone, disappeared forever. Greatest project ever created by humanity, but they couldn't save the video.
I wonder why. I mean, this sort of scenario seems to happen, and we've seen it in the we've seen it not that long ago with Jeffrey Epstein. We saw it on 9/11. A lot of these tapes just sort of go into the ether, and they're never seen again. Makes you
Yeah,
wonder
well, the
why.
problem with Apollo 11 or Apollo program is that if we had high quality video, you could easily tell today. What you do is there's this thing called parallax. This has already been done by a guy on, I can't remember his name, he's a Ukrainian. This was done about 10 years ago. So what you do with parallax is how you make 3D movies. You have with 3D movies, you have two cameras that are slightly apart, it's like a foot apart, and then they blend the two pieces of film together, which your glasses, create that. You put the glasses on, and then you can see the three-dimensional image. And that's how they can tell like the distance of planets and stars away from the Earth. So they'll image a star, say Betelgeuse, in March, and then they'll image it again in September. Then they blend the two photographs together, and then they can see how far away that star is from the Earth or that planet. And it always works, it's perfect. And so what this Ukrainian scientist did was he took two photographs that were taken just slightly apart from each other of the Apollo missions, and he parallaxed them. And he said the background is about 45 feet behind the astronauts, that mountain there. That mountain is 45 feet behind. That 6,000 foot mountain is 45 feet behind the astronauts. And it was a screen that's 45 feet behind the astronauts. That's clearly what he was finding over and over and over. He kept doing parallax and finding the screen that was behind the astronauts, the front projection screen that I talked about, and proving that it's all fake, completely proving it's fake.
And one of the things you mentioned were that you had a sort of known several people who dropped acid and went to watch the 2001 Space Odyssey film. My question to you, Jay, is why didn't you drop acid and watch the film?
I always found acid was too abrasive. I much prefer like maybe magic mushrooms or something,
Ah, okay.
but I didn't take mushrooms either to go see it. I didn't want to because what happened with me was I was a very well-read, high IQ kid, but I had no direction at all in my life. And then in 1968, at 15 years old, I saw 2001: A Space Odyssey, and then all I wanted to do was be a filmmaker. And so what I did was I immediately went to the library and checked out like 25 books on how to make films, and I bought myself a Super 8 movie camera, and I started going to see movies alone. And I went alone not because I was a lonely person. I went
Right.
alone because I wanted to concentrate on how this film was made, what how you would do it, how they did it. And since 2001 was my favorite movie, I never wanted to obscure it with drugs. I wanted to watch it in its full glory every time I saw it. And I can see why you'd want to, because it's a very psychedelic
It's
movie,
a
but
great film. Yeah. And Jay, for the record, I would have definitely dropped acid and seen that during the time. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you.
yeah, well, all my friends did. And they would go sit in the front on the floor,
Oh,
under the
wow.
center on the screen. The screen was about 15 feet away from them. And I was like, I don't know how you guys can do
Wow. I mean, yeah,
Yeah.
they saw a whole nother film. I mean, I know there's some subliminals, and I'm sure they caught every single one of them. Because some movies you're supposed to watch in an altered state to pick up on these sort of subliminal messages. And Kubrick was the man with the subliminals. I mean, just watch 2001 Space Odyssey again, and you'll see a lot of things in that film that have pretty much come to fruition. We have these sort of computers in front of us, and you get the picture, Jay.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you want to really see, read an amazing book, it's called The City and the Stars by Arthur C. Clarke. I think it was written in 63, maybe. And he's got wall televisions where you can create your own TV shows and put them out for everyone to see. He's got complete internet. He's got everything that we have in our world right now. Only he said this is a million years from now that this would happen in this book. So,
wow.
Incredibly prescient film, that's for sure. But if you really want, to me, the most psychedelic Kubrick film is the first half hour of A Clockwork Orange. Uh-huh. I wouldn't take acid or anything to watch that because of the violence. But that, to me, is the closest evocation in cinema to what being on a psychedelic is like.
I'm glad you brought that up because you also mentioned that in one of the last videos I saw you talk about these sort of things. And you mentioned the Clockwork Orange, and you mentioned how some of your friends became influenced in this sort of what was going on. They wanted to become, like you said, thugs in a way.
Yeah, two of my friends that I saw Clockwork Orange with in 1971 turned into thugs right after they saw the movie. One got arrested like a week later, destroying property in downtown in the city where I lived. And another one was arrested actually for attempted murder.
Holy hell.
Yeah, within 3 months of seeing the film. And I actually really thought that they had been controlled by that film. And when Kubrick pulled the film in England where he lived, I thought, he doesn't want that film being shown in the area where he lives. How interesting, right? And it is extremely powerful film. The opening scene, Alex is staring straight at you with a close-up of his eyes and then the slow pull out of the Mokala milk bar, and clearly references adrenochrome on the wall. There's one of the drugs that they sell at the milk bar is drenchrome, which is just short for adrenochrome. And that's not Kubrick. That's taken from the book. And he was an intelligence agent. The guy that wrote the book, whose name I'm going to forget here. And he worked for intelligence agencies too. So, and you got to wonder, you know, I believe that after 2001, every one of Kubrick's films was an experiment. And Clockwork Orange was, the experiment was, can I get the audience to really like a complete psychopath? Is it possible? And the answer was, yeah, we did. You got the audience to like a complete psychopath. Absolutely. And then you wonder, was there other experiments going on? Was he attempting to create thug culture? He certainly did. I can tell you that. I myself witnessed in New York City in 1972 a gang of droogs walking down the street, complete with cod pieces, white hat, cane with blades in them and everything. Big guys. And so it really was a kind of a thug culture right after that. I mean, the entire 70s, for those of us who lived it, was nothing but rampant crime.
Wow.
I mean, it was everywhere you went. There was cities falling apart, burning down, crime everywhere, dangerous time to be alive.
So, Jay, let me ask you this. So, do you believe that, let's say, film and video games that are, like, very ultra-violent, do you think that influences the broader spectrum of America, or globally rather?
Oh yeah, definitely.
You definitely believe that?
I do. I believe that, you know, I mean,
I'm under the impression, Jay, that America in itself, in the broader spectrum, is totally wild and insane before any of these things even entered our psyche. I believe we as humans are insanely violent as it is.
Have you ever read Blood Meridian?
I have.
Oh, my God.
Of course. Yeah.
So, I mean, that captured the West better than any book ever. I don't think they can turn it into a movie. I know they're trying, but I don't think it's
going to happen, to be honest with you.
No, but that is the West.
Right.
The West was the psychopaths who had been driven out of the East. Who else would go out into the wilderness? I mean, you'd have to be crazy to go out there alone. So the very first people that met the Native Americans, the very first white people outside of the explorers, were the crazy, the psychopaths, people that couldn't live in the East because they were so crazy. And that book really exemplifies the psychopathic nature of the conquest of the West. And America really is this, we're still Wild West. I
We really
mean,
are, because we still love the murderers out there. We still love the people that we probably shouldn't love, Jay. That's pro I was gonna say that's probably part of the problem. That's a lot of peas, by the way. But I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. But at the same time, if you look at things that are popular in like podcasts, for instance, media, the shows that are about crime and murder are always rated number one. And
absolutely.
look at all the women out there, Jay. And I hate to single you women out, but a lot of those women, they love going to bed, watching and hearing and seeing about murder. I
They
mean, what
do.
does that say about America, Jay?
My good friend, the late great David McGowan, wrote a book called "Programmed to Kill." And I read it, and D David was just an excellent researcher, and he kind of proves that there's a whole bunch of cults in the United States that do ritual sacrifice and murder, and they've been doing it for a long time, for 40, 50 years or more, and he details it in that book. And he doesn't even believe that. He believes there are some serial killers, but he thinks most serial killers are people who have been programmed to do that. And I think that's what they're doing with movies and video games. They're literally trying to create a violent society so that we will join their military, and that military is what backs the corporate structure. So it's in their interest to create a violent society.
It's like you're reading my mind right now, Jay, because I was about to bring up the military entertainment complex. As you know, the DOD, very much into their military movies, and they're pretty much in bed with Hollywood. They pretty
Oh,
much
yeah.
go off of each other, and there's plenty of movies that have been made that are completely sponsored by the DOD, by the Pentagon. You have things like Top Gun, you have Apollo 13, Air Force One. Deep
But
Impact,
2001,
2001. That's
yeah.
why another great example, because you had this unlimited budget to make a film. And where do you get that kind of money? Oh, yeah, the government, the Pentagon, NASA, the military
Aerospace
entertainment
companies.
company. Yeah.
Yeah, high-tech companies. That's who financed 2001. I'm convinced of it. I don't think that MGM probably spent more than $1 million on it,
I'm with you on
but
that, yes.
yeah, they all did. And there's a famous quote from Life in Pictures. It was a documentary about Stanley Kubrick, the head of MGM, the president. He's asking, you guys got this real expensive science fiction movie you're making in London. What do you think about it?" He goes, "Oh, I'm not really paying much attention to it." And it's like, come on, give me a break.
Yeah, that's bullshit. Come on.
Yeah, that's bullshit. So, and I think a lot of movies are financed. I wouldn't be surprised at all if intelligence agencies were behind the last three Kubrick films. Full Metal Jacket, no, yeah, Full Metal Jacket, Eyes Wide Shut, and The Shining.
Did you like Full Metal Jacket, by the way?
I do like Full Metal Jacket. It's a really peculiar movie, and
It's a little different, yeah.
So it's a it, what the movie really is about is masculinity, a fake masculinity. The Marines are fake men, and what's this is my peepee, and this is my
Right.
gun. One's for pleasure, and one's for fun.
Yes.
Mary Jane Rotten Crotch, constantly disparaging women. Yet in the movie, The great brave Marines are going up against a sniper who turns out to be a 14-year-old girl who kills almost everybody in
the platoon. Yeah.
And then at the very end of the movie, just to prove that this is what the movie's about, as the Marines are walking away from all of this and everything's on fire and it's night, they're singing. What are they singing? Who's the leader of the club that's made for you and me? MICKEYMOUSE. They're mouses. They're not men. They're mice, not men.
Mice of
and
men.
And that's what the movie is actually about. And it's about how we take young boys and we teach them fake masculine values in which they act out. And that's the most dangerous animal of all.
Absolutely. This is my rifle. This is my gun. This is for fighting and this is for fun. I mean, that is beautiful, by the way. Even as crude as that sounds, I mean, just that melody is it's remarkable, in my opinion. What a great film.
Yeah. And the ending was just great with the Vietnamese girl on the ground going, kill me, American, kill me.
Right.
You know, and he doesn't have the guts to pull the trigger even though she's just killed like seven of his buddies. Right. And she's the hero. She's the brave person. She's the one who's fighting for her people.
That's right. And Jay, I got to ask you this. Where do you stand right now in terms of like war and conflict and all the things that are going on around the world? I'm sure you've seen plenty of videos of maybe drones killing Ukrainians or Russians. I mean, I've seen it all. I've been seeing a lot of this footage and it is gruesome. I sure as hell don't want to go out there and get blown up by like a 1 foot, maybe even smaller drone. But I've been seeing these drone footages of these drones just shredding everyone into pieces. It's pretty damn crazy, Jay.
Yeah, we better come back from the edge. I mean, what happened in the old days when some elderly guy who was famous would start a diplomatic action just on their own? It used to happen all the time, and now it doesn't happen at all. Why doesn't somebody come forth and say, I want to do peace talks between Ukraine and Russia? Let's do peace talks between the Gazans and the Israelis. And what are we doing? We're taking the most extreme measures. And because it's a result of this mind-controlled, violent culture that we, the United States, has spread all over the world. I'm sorry, it has.
Well, we've been MK Ultra for sure into being this violent specimen. And America is violent. Let's be honest. Who are we kidding ourselves?
Exactly. It's a really violent country.
And I'm not a liberal, by the way. You know, I'm one of these people that believe you do need to retaliate once a country is screwing with you. I believe that I believe in defending yourself. But what we're seeing right now is not anyone defending themselves, especially with the weaponry we have right now. It's a whole other level.
I think that we should bomb the cartels in Mexico. I do.
I mean,
they should be bombed.
I don't disagree.
Figure out where they are, and just drop a bomb on them.
The problem with that, though, Jay.
If they fall into the country, then they need to be bombed.
The problem with that, though, Jay, is that we are heavily intertwined with the drug cartels. I mean, we're very much into the exporting of arms and drugs with the Mexican cartels. And the problem is with our government and theirs. We're pretty much embedded with them, and pretty much America is as corrupted as a third world country is, their government.
Well, I think we're almost to third world.
We're pretty close. We're pretty close.
Sliding fast. But, you know, I don't know. I suppose that my court case gave me new faith in the justice system, I guess. But I don't know. I don't really have much faith in anything, any of the institutions now. They've all been seized by our enemies. And, don't know what we're going to be able to do about it.
Yeah, that's what perturbs me the most.
You know, people like Cliff High, they say that there's a, what is it, what he calls it, a SOC, which is a self-organizing group of people that are going to do things that will prevent all this from happening. And that could be. I know a couple groups that are self-organized and they do really intelligent stuff that kind of upends things. But unless we find a way to stop the centralization of power, We're not going to have any kind of victory.
And when was the last time you spoke to Mr. Cliff High? You don't mind me asking.
I talk to him. I email him probably every other day or every 2 days.
I'm sure he's doing good. I was just curious.
Well, we're almost exactly the same age, and we read all the same science fiction books and all that. So
nice.
We have a lot in common when you're got somebody's your own age, and we both have background in programming. And I certainly enjoy his musings.
I like Cliff, no doubt. Some of the things I don't completely side with him on, but I mean, I don't completely side with anyone, Jay. That's my problem.
No, I don't either. And, you know, but we are living in a time that has never happened before.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm old enough to remember when, you know, when you couldn't even get a good history book. Or find out anything. Getting any information was a super struggle, just not that long ago, just 40 years ago, and so now we have a lot of information that we've never had before, and that is going to be the deciding factor in what's about to happen. And the faster that we can convert normies over, the better. And that is my goal right now, is to continue what I started with Guy. There's some tipping point, and we haven't hit it yet. When enough normies finally come to awakened state, then it's going to collapse, and then they're going to be done. And I think that the powers that be know all this, and that's why they're in overdrive right now, because they know, I think it was the big new Brzezinski said, we have to get going faster because they're waking up too fast. And I think that is exactly what's going on. And all of us who are awake, we need to, like, 24/7 spread the word. And it doesn't matter what kind of names you're called. Who cares? At this stage, it's our survival is at stake. And so waking up the normies and getting them to understand. I'll tell you a story. In 2016, during the election, my wife had a party and all of her friends came over. It was like 70% women at this party. Yeah.
I see danger already, Jay.
Yeah. And somebody asked me what I thought of Trump. And he had just done something that I thought was absolutely hilarious.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah. And I said, oh man, did you see how he tweaked those guys the other day, those reporters? And I said something, and the whole party got really angry at me because I'd said something nice about him. And they're all were screaming at me and everything. And I said, well, he's probably going to be your next president, so get used to it. And every one of those people at that party that was angry at me that night are all completely the opposite now. I took these normies and I made sure that they got woken up. And now they're all completely opposite of what they were then. And I don't know anybody who's gone the other way. That's the other thing. I don't know anybody who was all awake who then decided, you know what? I'm just not going to read the internet anymore. I'm going to close down. I don't know anybody that goes the other way. So, you know, from what I hear, Biden is at like 9% in the real polling. So they know all this and they're going to panic and they can't let Trump in. So I don't know what they're going to do.
And yes, I remember you even talking about this maybe like 8 months ago. You were already predicting that we were going to see what we're seeing today.
Yep.
And it's happening all around college campuses.
I said it. I said it.
You pretty much did. So I
April 2024.
Right. So I attest for Jay. I mean, he was right.
As soon as the weather gets nice. I thought it was going to be a redo of BLM. This is a much more sophisticated operation.
Still sponsored by the same people, though.
Same people, but much more sophisticated. And, you know, it's so funny. There's so many terrible things going on in the world. You just got to wonder why they picked this thing to have a hill to die on. And is it the left is actually going to choose gender apartheid? Really? That's what you're choosing? You're choosing a religion that practices gender apartheid? Okay. You can do that if you want, but I don't know.
So, Jay, in other words, you're telling me that you don't stand with gays for Palestine. That's a strange concept.
Sometimes I think that's a right-wing guy that does those things.
I don't even know what to make of it.
Trolling everybody? I would love to do that. Go put a Gays for Palestine shirt on and walk around.
Go to Palestine with a sign like that.
Yeah, it's just beautiful.
See how that works out. But what a weird time.
Yeah, those poor people in East Palestine in Ohio would just take the East off of their name, they might get some help from the government.
That's true.
Yeah.
Wow, what a weird time we live in, Jay. And I hate to say it, but I seriously wonder how history will remember any of these things that have been going on the last 20 years or 40 years now, Jay. I really do wonder how history will pretty much capture all of this and if it's going to be accurate or just some nonsense that we have been seeing for forever in history books where it's all lies.
Well, in my new film, which is on Prime, JFKX, Solving the Crime of the Century, we show how the Kennedy brothers in the 1960s recognized and tried to stop the criminal takeover of our country, and they failed. And all the mob did after the Kennedy ordeal was simply just go corporate. And they went corporate, and now we have mob-influenced corporations running everything. And what you get on something like that is what we got in 2020.
Oy vey.
Where the big companies are just so corrupt that they own everything. The pharmaceutical companies own all the media. You can't criticize them.
That's what happens when corporations become bigger than government. And that's already happened, Jay. That's what's scary as hell. They're calling the shots. They're the ones that are directing your kids to do what they do today. You could thank the media. You could thank the TV, the newspapers. They are pretty much all bought and sold. And they sold us down the river a long time ago, Jay.
Yeah. If you read Programmed to Kill by David McGowan, it was written in 2004. He talks about how these satanic groups have plans to do things in the future that will seem outlandish, but they have specific reasons for them doing it. And that's what we're watching right now. What he saw 20 years ago in his book, we're now seeing it all being acted out. And so what people don't realize is that these mafias, these gangs, whether they're South American or American, they actually openly practice Satanism. Whether you believe in Satan or not, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
They believe in it, and they actually practice it. And that is what is behind what is going on. And they're behind a lot of the... A lot of the killings and the missing people and all of that. And they're much more powerful and much more pervasive than we could ever believe. And even right now, there's several cults running around the United States and Western Europe that are murdering people and in ritual sacrifice. And they're doing it in such a way that they aren't getting caught. And unless you're really paying attention, you don't even know it's happening. But it is happening, and it's been happening for a long time. It's getting worse.
Yeah, a lot of people like to believe that a lot of these things weren't happening way back in, let's say, the 50s, for instance. Everybody was following the rules back then. That's a big illusion. Murder, rape, all of this sort of unsavory behavior was already going on way back yesteryear.
That movie Casino by Martin Scorsese.
Good movie.
That's about my parents' generation, right? They were really violent. Believe me. The greatest generation, blah, blah, blah. No. They were really violent, and they were constantly joking about pedophilia with kids Always. I remember it all the time. I even remember when I was like 6 years old, seeing a member of Congress make a joke about rape. It's better to just let it happen, you know, enjoy it. And I was like, people don't realize that America has a history of incredible violence. I mean, from its inception to this very day.
I agree. Man is wolf to man, Jay. Absolutely. I never forgot that.
And that's why everybody should learn martial arts and everybody should learn how to shoot. And I mean, men and women, young and old, all of them. They need everyone. It should be mandatory for every 5-year-old to learn at least 3 different martial arts before they're 8 years old.
I agree with you on
Mandatory.
that.
And then we would be a well-protected society. But you know, they don't even tell us. Our government doesn't even tell us how to protect ourselves. They don't warn us. They don't tell us to go out and buy food, store food, get gold, maybe get some lumber or some wood for your wood stove so that you don't freeze to death. They don't care about us at all. I mean, they don't. The Chinese government tells their people to do all these things. The Russian government tells their people to do all these things. Our government doesn't tell us anything.
I wonder
In
why.
fact, because they're stealing the country from us. They want us to be stupefied. It's called the Great Taking. And there's a company, and it's called Seed, Seede, Seed Corporation. You can go Wikipedia it. Seed Corporation was created by the CIA in the late 60s, and it owns 78, no, 82% of everybody, all stock. You don't own your stock. If you think you own your stock, you don't. This company, Seed Corporation, it says it right there on Wikipedia. They own 83% of all the stock that's owned. You're borrowing that stock from that company, and they can call it in at any time. And so, you know, you don't own anything that you own. And I bet you that there's some secret clause in real estate law that says that they can take your house anytime they want. So they're getting ready to steal America from us. They don't think that we deserve this country. They think that we're just a bunch of lucky guys who got here and swiped the place, and now other people are coming to swipe it from us. And everything that's been going on for the last 40 or 50 years is done to demoralize us, to diminish us, and then to get ready for the great taking, in which they take all of our money, all of our assets, all of our stocks, all of our homes, and everything. And they're about to do it. And here's the thing. They are so complicit criminally that if anybody gets in office that can look at that criminality, they're going to get arrested. And they know that. So they would rather have World War III than have their own complicity be discovered. And that's the unfortunate facts of the matter. And the fact is that they're involved in child trafficking and sex and drugs and murder, and they can't get caught.
That's
And
right. And
they
we protect all these people and send them money, by the way.
We do.
This is why I was telling you earlier, Jay, that we can't get rid of that Mexican drug cartel because we're in bed with them, Jay.
We are.
That's kind of the
We are.
problem. But I'm with you on that. I wish we could disband that, but there's way too much money in that. Very much like there's way too much money in stock and oil. Can't get rid of the oil. We need that. Very much like we need drugs and guns and people out there, they need their underage kids.
Yeah,
That's a
I
sick
wonder
world,
what
Jay. It's a sick world.
it is, and you have to start asking yourself, well, you know, what is it that they're looking for? You know, and what they're looking for is they're looking for tons of wealth and long life. That's what they want. I've known many, many very, very wealthy people, and they're all interested. Once they've achieved all their money, all they're interested in is extending their life, doing anything they can to extend their life. Why someone would want to live to be 250 years old, I haven't any clue at all, but they do. And I think that's already been accomplished.
It probably
They
has, and
know it.
that's another great concept and question that just rolled in my mind here. So, Jay, if I had a some sort of magical pill that would sort of make that battery inside of you tick a lot longer, maybe even for eternity, you wouldn't take that pill, Jay.
No, you'll really mess up your soul if you live a long time. You'll really mess it up because you have to have karma. The law of karma has to be enacted one way or another. And so you're messing up with the law of karma. So no, I mean, I wouldn't mind living to be 120 if I was in good health,
right?
Or even 150 if I was in good health. But I think that's about the longest that you'd want to live. Now, the Elohim, who are in the Bible, they live to be, you know, hundreds and thousands of years old. And the, you know, they practice alchemy for that reason. And and so, you know, they're using certain substances found here on Earth that will extend their life. Now that knowledge has been discovered by the elites. It's been discovered for a while because it was mentioned in A Clockwork Orange, which is over 50 years ago. So if you really want to know what I'm talking about, actually, there's a movie called Monsters, Inc. And in that movie, the whole point of that movie, it's a cartoon. I have no idea why any kid would I would never let my kids see this.
I've seen that, yeah.
Yeah. In the movie, the whole point is that if you can scare a kid, if the monsters can scare a kid enough, the kid will start emitting a secret juice. And that secret juice can be used to make the monsters live longer. And that's the plot of the movie. And, you know, one time I was talking to Jordan Maxwell, and I said, Jordan, if you had to recommend one movie, and I'd not seen Monsters, Inc. at this point, this is probably 10 years ago that he told me, I said, if you had to see one, if you had to see one movie or recommend a movie that kind of explained reality, what movie would it be? He said, oh, that movie, Monsters, Inc. I was like, really?
That's pretty funny.
And then I went and I watched it and I went, wow, what are they trying to tell me here? And it's not just in Monsters, Inc. It's in Dr. Sleep, that movie, which is a sequel to The Shining. The ghosts or whatever they are, they're terrifying this little kid. And then they're injecting a needle into his arm and extracting his blood. There's a lot of movies, actually, that have this kind of plot line going. And which tells me that the elite already know all this and that they use this stuff for their longevity. And that would also explain why they're always 10 steps ahead of us, because they've been on Earth a lot longer than we have. So they already know how things work.
Absolutely. And one day man will mesh with machine. We have all these billionaires doing exactly what you're talking about right now. And all of them want to extend their lives. And one day... Yeah, one day that's going to become a reality where it's going to be a lot like the movie The Matrix almost, to some degree.
Yeah. Now, I did talk to a neurophysicist who told me that dropping a chip into your brain would cause an aneurysm. He said it might work for about a year or so, but eventually it's going to cause an aneurysm. So I'm not sure it can work. This guy is one of the smartest guys I've ever met, so I would very much listen to him. And now they still can put it on a tattoo on your arm or whatever, the chip. But I don't know if they can actually put one in your brain. They keep saying they do. And Musk.
Yeah, he's doing those trial runs with that with some people out there that, you know, can't walk. And they have other they're cognitively not all there, but some, like the Neuralink, will fix those sort of things. They claim, but during the trials, like you were saying, they did some trials with some monkeys out there, and the results weren't good. A lot of them were ripping that thing off.
Oh, I bet. I bet they hated it. I don't want anybody interfering with my brain, so I'm not doing it. But yeah, I mean, we're at that point now where we're either going to go all the way with the high tech, or we're going to descend into a kind of decentralized communities where travel is going to be limited, and probably going to have to grow most of your own food, and water is going to have to be locally sourced. And every one of you listening should be thinking about that, because if you're not in a place that has these amenities, you might want to move to a place that does. And because you don't want to get caught when the music stops and you have to sit down on your chair, and you don't want to be in a bad place. So this is where we're going. I would say it's going to be a combination of the two. We're going to go out into more a small agri communities, but we're going to take our high tech with us and use it to improve our situation. But I prefer that future than the future of Neuralink and everybody in on the web, internet together, linked together, playing their video games in their locked room. No, I don't know if I want that kind of future. So, you know, I advocate for a decentralized world, completely decentralized.
I have to acquiesce, no doubt on that. You know, I miss the days when we weren't all so connected, Jay.
Yeah.
I honestly do.
I do too. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad I have knowledge at my fingertips that I never had before.
Sure.
But sometimes I just have too much knowledge. I have too many things I know, and it's too overwhelming. So I know what you mean, but I think it's really important to, I do this all the time. I just turn off for 3 or 4 days.
Tune in and drop out.
Yep. I just turn off everything and just get out. My wife was turning into a blithering idiot.
Oh my.
And I said, you've got to turn off the internet. You've got to get away. You cannot be reading that stuff anymore. And it was like an addiction. It took her 2 months to pull herself off of it. And then she pulled herself off of it. And she's the woman that I married. I'm like, oh, so nice to have you back. You know, fill in your head with all that crap.
Right. It happens. Yeah. It happens. Yeah. People get misled of reading the internet and reading this or that. And then at times you could even develop a like autism, almost, in a way. You develop these sort of the lingo, you start to develop like these weird behavior patterns that you see others on this black box in front of us, whether it's in your living room or a computer here. But yes, it's quite the time we live in, and a lot of people take that for granted. They don't really examine these things, and these are the normies, Jay.
Yeah, the normies, and they really got to they've got to pull themselves out of it, you know, and I don't know how to get them out of it except to keep telling them things. You know, everybody should take 1 hour a day and exercise, 1 hour a day and meditate, and 1 hour a day trying to tackle something difficult, whether it's a difficult book, a difficult task, or something like that. You have to challenge yourself every day. And if you don't, then you're going to fall into laziness and you're going to become a pattern, just to start living your life as a pattern. And you don't want to do that. So that's what I recommend everybody does every day.
I agree with you 100%. And Jay, it's been a wonderful discussion with you. I don't want to take up too much of your time. You've been quite courteous with your time here for all of us, and I do want to thank you, my friend. It's always a honor and privilege to speak to you, Jay. And any last words here before we cut you loose?
All fear comes from the fear of death, and then if you don't have the fear of death, then you start losing all the other fears that you have. And you have a invisible plasma body, and when you die, that plasma body shrinks down to your spinal column, and it shoots out the top of your head, and you go back up into the plasma cloud that lives around our Earth. And that is what death is, and there's nothing to be afraid of. And if we can get the normies to realize that, then we will get the world that we want.
Love that, Jay. Very nice. Once again, I will talk to you on the other side, my friend.
Okay.
You got it.
Talk to you.
Talk to you soon. And there he goes, boys and girls. That was my guest, Mr. Jay Widener. Always a honor and pleasure to have him here on the program. And always a honor and pleasure to do the show for you. Always cool to do it live. And yes, the graphic there. I forgot to play that during the live show here. Yes, that beautiful Back to the Future sort of thing here. But ladies and gentlemen, we will return again with another live show for you very, very soon. And for those who have not subscribed here yet, I don't know what you're doing. You must subscribe to the show and catch another live show when we do it. And yes, I'm thinking maybe this Friday or Saturday, who knows, maybe even sooner. The only way to find out is if you subscribe. And yes, nice midday show indeed. I felt like it was time to bring Jay back on here and discuss all these awesome things. And if you missed the program, yes, once this stream ends, you could go back and listen to the replay. And of course, for those who want to listen in their car away from YouTube, definitely find this on Spotify and iTunes and basically wherever your podcasts are located. That's probably where we'll be, no doubt. Once again, boys and girls, subscribe to the show, listen to the live show, the podcast, and if you want bonus material, there's patreon.com/Michael Deacon. Patreon, great platform. Or right here on YouTube, by the way. Sometimes I upload shows that are on Patreon right here on YouTube, and that's for members only. Not a huge fee. Not a huge fee at all. And yes, watch out for them indeed. You never know. I'm glad you brought that up, CM. You really never know. Take caution, by the way. Once again, boys and girls, I will see you on the other side. Always, again, an honor and pleasure. I will never get tired of doing the show, that's for sure. And much love to all of you out there who listen live. I forgot to mention that. Those of you right here in the chat room, much love and respect to all of you. Ah, yes. Much, much love. Hugs and kisses to all. And with that said, the world is a mysterious place, and life itself is a mystery. Until next time, good night.
Right.